Here's a big money number for you. $4 billion a year. That's billion with a B. And that's the market for educational toys in the United States. You know, the kind that make your kid or your grandkid or your friend's kid a genius.
My name's Kayla and yours is Abby.
She understands you.
Our revolutionary technology, we're ready to be your child's best friend.
We're lost in the rainforest.
With revolutionary technology that learns and grows with your child.
Let's learn something new.
Snuggle up to learning with more than 15 activities that teach first words, animals, and more.
You probably purchased one of these toys for a child in your life. I know I have. But the real question is, do they deliver what they advertise? Will they supercharge your baby? And for a child to play and learn, are batteries required?
It's a somewhat uniquely American thing, this need to have a, you know, sort of genius children. And it's even in the names of the of some of the products like Leapfrog or Einstein, you know, these things that that really tell you if your kid's not ahead, he's falling behind.
Eric Vance is a science writer, and his new article for Scientific American is called Can You Supercharge Your Baby? It reveals what the research really says about the benefits of educational toys and whether the emphasis on your child developing first really matters.
When you talk to child psychologists, what they say is completely different from what you get from the marketing around a lot of these toys. You know, child psychologists, they don't think about doing things early or making, you know, making genius children. You know, they're much more interested in the natural progression. And so I was talking to this child psychologist, and he was telling me about his own experience with this. And when he was in a store trying to get a teething ring for his kid, and found this teething ring, and it said it promotes oral, motor, and language development. And
this, that sounds pretty impressive ring. For a teething ring.
Right, it's a teething ring, and you know, he and his wife are, you know, world experts on, you know, developmental psychology, and they're like, I don't even know what oral motor development is. and of course, it's, you know, it's not really a thing, and it's certainly not a thing attached to teething rings. But that's, you know, everything has to promote development or make your kid smarter or move him ahead. And, you know, I feel like a lot of things today can't just be a toy or a teething ring.
Are these products actually supercharging babies?
Overwhelmingly, I found the answer to be no. If you want your kid to read early or to talk early, there's not a lot of evidence that you can do that. And there's no evidence that that has any lasting effect on the child's development or success in life. And so I sort of took this from a few different angles, a few different products. And for all of the concern we have, you know, for talking is a great one. You know, when does he talk? Well, my kid talk, you know, start talking at 9 months. You know, for all of our concern about this, it doesn't really mean anything for the kid or the adult that he'll become. And so a lot of these products seem to be promising something that doesn't, or trying to promote something that doesn't necessarily tie to later development. And there are a lot of things that do tie to later development, but it doesn't seem like that's a needle that can be moved, and certainly not in the first couple of years.
So obviously, this is a big business, though. Most parents want to see their kids succeed. What are these marketers and these toy manufacturers tapping into when it comes to parents?
I mean, if there's anything that we care about more than our own health, it's the health or the success of our child, right? And I think that it's such a powerful desire that you can't help but just not only want it, but also be worried about whether or not you're doing it wrong. I looked at a lot of products, and I looked at the science behind a lot of these products, and I can tell you honestly, almost all of them I considered buying myself as I researched them. Even if they clearly didn't do anything, that insecurity is very powerful, that desire to get something that might help your kid.
Well, now we talk about truth in advertising. Are there any legal limitations to what these products can promise?
Well, there are. And the primary regulator there would be the FTC. And I wrote about one case that the FTC got involved in when there were promises about, actually it was called Your Baby Can Read. And the promise was obviously to teach babies as, you know, as young as a few months old how to read. But the thing is the FTC, you know, they could spend all day, every day, just doing this, and they simply don't have the resources at the time. They have a lot of things to focus on, all sorts of false advertising. So the reality is that companies have a lot of leeway, a lot more, I think, than the average reader would assume. I think we assume that there's some sort of check on what products can promise, and I didn't really find that beyond some very egregious cases. It's it's kind of up to the advertiser to say what their product does.
This seems to be, when we talk about things like this and buying toys for your kids and the best toys or the best developmental tools, isn't there an economic component there? Like poorer families just can't afford to get in this game at all?
This is a huge point. When you talk to the scientists who study this, that's what the overwhelming majority of them are interested in things like the 30 million word gap, where certain kids, you know, hear fewer words by the time they're 4 years old. And a lot of these toys are premised on ideas that are trying to address issues, these systemic problems in our culture, where there are kids who aren't getting enough engagement. They're not getting enough stimulation. But stimulation is a little like vitamins or food. You need enough, but more isn't necessarily better. You don't, you know, if you take extra, most kids who are not in really stressful homes are getting enough engagement, especially in the first couple of years, they're getting enough stimulation. But there are, you know, kids in poorer neighborhoods, kids so lower socioeconomic status and more stress in their home has a huge effect on a lot of developmental benchmarks. And that's where I think a lot of the science is. But that doesn't necessarily translate to, you know, creating a blinking caterpillar that can teach your child how to do coding. You know, like this is, there's sort of a disconnect there. But that first issue is very important. And it's a systemic problem in our country.
And it seems like, I think back to things like Sesame Street that were created initially, at least, to help to close that gap. But that was that was public television. That was something that was available specifically for low-income kids, I think, to have access to these types of learning tools. But this sounds more like you can either afford to buy the Caterpillar with the blinking lights that teaches you how to code or you can't.
And what I think what we're seeing is that the people who buy them are not necessarily people who need them. And also, the way that these things are created has also created a lot of concern among scientists, especially with the pace that they run at. If you watch an old Mr. Rogers episode, and there's a scientist who's worked on this a lot named Dimitri Christakis, he goes really slowly. You know, everything he does is really almost infuriatingly slow. But he's working at the pace of real life. Today, a lot of these products, a lot of these videos go very fast. And it may have effects on a child's development, how their cognitive development goes along, because they're pacing themselves to a world that isn't really real.
There's so much to talk about there, particularly when it comes to screen time. But that's probably for another conversation. Eric Vance, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Eric Vance is a science writer and author of the book Suggestible You, The Curious Science of Your Brain's Ability to Deceive, Transform, and Heal.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.